that doesn't get you excited. I don't know what does. That gets you hyped for an NBA mock draft podcast, doesn't it?
Makes me want to wear my clothes backwards, too, like they did. They wore, like, their jeans and their shirts crisscross. They wore, like, their jeans and their shirts backwards and stuff.
I really thought that was a fashion thing that was going to really last a long time.
I thought it was going to catch on, too. I mean, they tried, you know?
We'll try to bring it back. We'll see what some of these guys wear at the NBA draft in Newark this June.
That's right.
Well, if that was enough of an intro for you, alongside Connor Orr, I'm Mike Vorkunov, and we're coming back with a special NBA draft podcast.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
We're doing this the morning after the Miami Heat have finished off the Oklahoma City Thunder. Five games, NBA Finals champions. LeBron got his first ring.
Yeah.
Maybe people can stop talking about that now. Give the guy a break.
Well, you know, I think what I'm amazed about is that, you know, when you look back at everything, and I just think when you look back at the beginning of when the playoffs started, and even when the finals started, most experts had Oklahoma City in five. And I don't know, that really surprised me because I saw,
what,
like,
experts said that?
I saw, like, a, like, the, you know, the ESPN panel that they did, like Legler and a bunch of those guys.
I thought it would go seven.
You thought it would go seven?
I thought it would go seven.
A lot of people were, like, really, really high in Oklahoma City, and I guess coming off that San Antonio series, you kind of had to be. But at the same time, I mean, it's just so hard to argue that level of talent, and especially now LeBron had so much to play for in this series that, you know, I was surprised that so many people took the Thunder in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been, and I was thinking about this last night, you know, if the Heat had lost this final somehow, it would have been so anomalous with NBA history that the best player in the game doesn't have a ring and lost three NBA finals while doing it. It would have been just so unique because we've never seen that in basketball. Talent always correlates with championships.
Right.
It's not football or baseball where you're one of 22 or 11 or...
Right.
11. Nine in baseball. We have nine. Okay.
DH.
Yeah, I guess DH. Depends. Yeah, okay. But, yeah, so, you know, and those were two different organizational models for building teams. The Heat came through free agency with, you know, LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh coming to Miami, taking their talents to South Beach. And Oklahoma City went through the draft with Kevin Durant being the number two overall pick, mm-hmm. James Harden being the number three overall pick, Russell Westbrook, I think, was the number four overall pick, Serge Ibaka was a draft pick, and then they kind of built around that core.
Right.
So it shows that you can win in many different ways in the NBA, but you need the high-end talent, and which is what every team is hoping to get later this month.
Yeah, no, and I think that the fact that Oklahoma City made it that far is encouraging for the NBA because I think for a while everyone kind of had that panic attack where I'm sure especially David Stern did where it's like, okay, all of a sudden we're going to have our five biggest markets stacked with talent and then the rest of these teams like your Sacramentos, your Torontos, all these teams just hemorrhaging money, not knowing what to do. But you know, Oklahoma City got long-term commitments from those guys, and I think that you know the fact that they made it to the finals and they made it that far is an encouraging thing for the future of the league. I think that you definitely can't complain about that.
Yeah, so those two teams are pretty much set for the long haul,
yeah.
Depending on what the Thunder do with James Harden. But obviously they're going to have some competitors hoping to get there.
Yeah.
And I think the number one team trying to get to that level now is the team that has the top pick in this NBA draft, the New Orleans Hornets.
Are we going to introduce our mock draft?
I think so. This is going to run sometime.
This will probably run...
Day of the draft, I imagine.
The day of the draft, the day before the draft in the Star Ledger. But we're going to give you guys a sneak preview of it today through the lottery because we don't want to get into the, Golden State in the, late first
with the
round.
The 30th pick.
With the 30th pick, I don't think anyone wants to hear that right now, cause, especially since it's just so up in the air. Who knows? That could be Billy King's pick. And
Yeah, who knows who they sell it to with their second pick. It could be, yeah. The Nets do like to trade in.
Very
but
true.
We spent a considerable amount of time on this.
We did. It was I like the way we did this too. It was like a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
It was almost like you gave me a little leeway and I gave you a little leeway, which I don't know if it's smart for me to do because of your Bismack Biyombo pick last year.
I still support just that, like, Bismack Biyombo pick. Yeah. Look, the kid's 19. He speaks five languages. Let him adjust.
Whenever you say it like that, it's just that, okay, yeah, well, the best part about him is he speaks five languages. That's like the first thing you say
so
about
him. So
does
Serge Ibaka. Look how he's done. Won the NBA defensive, he wasn't the defensive player of the year, but he was up there.
Sure. Okay.
All right, I'm just saying, people can speak five languages.
Give him time.
It works out well.
All right. Okay. All right. Let's get to it now. I mean, obviously, I think that there's really no secret whatsoever to this first pick. I mean, New Orleans won the lottery, and you know, Anthony Davis is by far the most impressive player in college basketball last year. I mean, just watching him in the NCAA tournament was tremendous. Just the way that he could take over games, his skill set, his athletic ability, it's all off the charts.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about him is he's 6'11". He's got a, you know, he's really long, but he's really just learning how to become a big man because he was a guard up until junior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So he's I kind of look at it like, do you ever see X-Men, the new class, when they're all trying to learn their superpowers?
Sure.
So they're all, you know, they have to like kind of work the kinks out, and then Beast doesn't want to be Beast and all that. That's Anthony Davis. He's trying to figure out what to do with his length, how to figure out how to play in the post and play like a big man. As he gets adjusted
he's
to Bambi
his new height.
He's Bambi on ice. You know? He is. He is at this point. And John Calipari said that he thinks he could be a three at some point. Think about that. So the guy is obviously going to develop, and he's already a beast now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is just really a no-doubt pick for New Orleans, and he's so far ahead of everyone else in this draft in terms of potential.
Now, I think the one thing I like about this draft is it gets interesting right after number one. I mean, I don't think that... I don't think the 2, 3, 4 are really set in stone. I think that the players, like the who is there, is set in stone pretty much. But I don't think the order necessarily is set in stone. But at number two, we have Thomas Robinson from Kansas going to Charlotte. He's another player that I like a lot. I mean, obviously, just a tremendous backstory. If you talk about a guy that you know, has had to deal with so much and also balance, you know, school and competitive college basketball, but just besides that, I mean, he's just a big, strong guy. He's someone that can come in right away and make a difference for Charlotte. But at the same time, you and I had joked about this yesterday. This is a Michael Jordan draft. We don't know what he's going to do.
He was working out, I think, Harrison Barnes the other day.
He worked out Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal's an option there. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. So you have four guys, really, who can go at number two to Charlotte. And, I think we kind of settled on Thomas Robinson going there kind of as like a fail-safe option.
Yeah.
Just like he seems like he would be the pick there. But if he goes Harrison Barnes, I wouldn't be surprised with the UNC ties. And Harrison Barnes, just the way he plays kind of reminds me of the Michael Jordan type of swagger, and he has a business sense to him. But I think that would be the worst pick of all the four options he has at number two, because I think Harrison Barnes is, you know, at best the fifth best player in this draft.
But like we said before, I mean, it's so hard now, especially when we're talking about these franchises that are kind of confused right now. I mean, they're all trying to build from that Oklahoma City model, but at the same time, they need to put, you know, butts in the seats right now. And, you know, Harrison Barnes would do that. I mean, he's a local kid.
Sure.
Came from UNC and, you know, has that kind of built-in fan base. And I don't think that can be ignored necessarily. But, you know, when we were talking about it yesterday, I thought it was interesting how we were going back and forth between – Is it what we think that the GM should do or what we think that the GMs will do? And I think there's a more of a likely chance that Michael Jordan will take a wild card, will take a flyer like Harrison Barnes, than to take the best player available, which, I mean, I think we're both in agreement there that Thomas Robinson is probably the best player available.
Yeah, and I think, actually, you know, if Charlotte takes Harrison Barnes, what it does to the rest of that top five, how everything moves around will be interesting.
Yeah,
I think that would create one of those avalanche effects just to mess everything up.
Yeah,
if Harrison Barnes goes at number two,
which would actually be pretty cool. So
yeah, I'm always in favor of anarchy and what'll happen in that scenario. But for now, we'll stick with Thomas Robinson at two from Kansas.
Yeah,
he was statistically he was maybe one the most impressive guy last year in the draft. You know, who's coming into the draft this year? And then we have Washington at three. They just pulled off an interesting trade, giving away Rashard Lewis's dead contract for Emeka Okafor and Trevor Ariza. So
really
it seems
interesting.
Like
yeah.
They want to contend
now
and in a near future. So they have themselves, you know, a guy to pair with Nene in the front court, and Trevor Ariza can start at the three. And I wondered, does that rule out MKG for the number three pick?
Probably. And I think with the, you know, I think there's been a lot of reports out about the Wizards working out Bradley Beal pretty heavily, and that's who we have, the Wizards taking at number three. And I think that's the perfect fit. I mean, I think it's the absolute perfect fit, like you said. I mean, there's one gaping hole in that lineup, and it's at the shooting guard position. And everyone's kind of, you know, comparing Bradley Beal to this young Ray Allen. I mean, once he came around in Florida, I mean, he was like a 40% clip from three-point range. And, you know, at the same time, a lot of people went back to his high school numbers, too, and they said that he took so long to adjust to Billy Donovan that you kind of have to take the beginning of his season with a grain of salt and kind of not pay attention to that because he wasn't as comfortable in his system.
Yeah, Billy Donovan tried to play a lot of, like, 3- and 4-guard sets in Florida, so Beal was the small forward there a little bit. So he's playing out of position, and then you have you had two guards in Florida who really, really like to shoot first.
Right.
Those types of guards. And so Beal kind of got lost in the fray till later on. I see him kind of like an Eric Gordon type. He's got the same type of body. He can drive when he needs to. And he's got a picture-perfect jump shot. So, I mean, you know, even if you see him struggling shooting, you think it'll come around just because mechanically everything's there.
Yeah. I mean, for John Wall, I mean, that takes some of the pressure off him. And it makes everything, especially now that JaVale McGee is not there. I mean,
Well, that's Washington's also going with the no knucklehead rebuilding theory.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of ruled out a few guys at number three there.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to number four, this is a New Jersey-based publication, so we had to create, in a sense, the perfect New Jersey Storm.
We actually played trumpets when we decided to put them here.
Yeah,
it was weird.
I think it's pretty obvious that we have Kentucky's Michael Kidd-Gilchrist going to Cleveland, pairing him with his former high school teammate Kyrie Irving with the Cavaliers. And, you know, I wasn't crazy about this pick. I kind of thought that Harrison Barnes might fit there, and I mean, there's a lot of people that I think could fit there, and I think that, I don't think this pick is necessarily set in stone, but one of the things that we both talked about and the thing that you kind of sold me on as far as convincing me to go with this pick is that, I mean, Gilchrist does everything that kind of Irving doesn't as far as, I mean, even though Irving's a good defensive player, I'm not saying he's not, but,
yeah.
You know, Gilchrist plays great defense, he's great on the boards, he's a very aggressive player, and, you know, that could help out Cleveland in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think, you know, he can really defend the two and the three.
Yeah.
And I think offensively he'll come around. He's never going to be a star offensively just because he doesn't quite have that skill set. But when you put him together with Kyrie Irving and the motor that he has, and you have Tristan Thompson, another Jersey guy, St. Mm-hmm. Ben's product.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Can we have another team like in that division that's all St. Ann's teams that beats them all the time? That would be awesome. It'd be hilarious. But yeah, you have those guys and you have Anderson Varejao. That's going to be a very aggressive, high motor team.
Who you called Sideshow Bob the other day.
He looks like he's a dead ringer for him.
He is, yeah.
So that's a team. They were close to a playoff spot before Kyrie Irving went down for the year. So next year, Kidd-Gilchrist, who can contribute right away, they could be close again and surpassing expectations.
Yeah, no, I think that's I mean, it's a pick that makes sense, and it's not something that's, you know, so far out of, you know, fathom, you know, that it's not going to happen. But, you know, I do like Kidd-Gilchrist. I think that's a good pick. And moving on to number five, Sacramento. I mean, I hated their pick last year. I hated, you know.
You didn't like Jimmer?
No, I just thought that was ridiculous. I mean, Are you more worried about putting people in seats, or are you more concerned about generating offense? I mean,
well, I thought the problem with that is, like, with DeMarcus Cousins and Tyreek Evans, and to throw Jimmer Fredette in there.
Yeah,
there's only one basketball at a time, and this is what kind of worries me. We have Harrison Barnes going there, like, that's a lot of guys who love to shoot and score and play with the ball. It's not a lot of it's not meant for, like, a lot of movement. How do you work all that stuff out, especially with Isaiah Thomas coming on, too?
Right.
So they have a lot of offensive guys who need the ball in their hands.
Yeah, and the one thing about Barnes is, I mean, you know, he doesn't play like he's 6'8". I mean, he's a big guy, but he, I mean, like you said, I mean, he's all over the court, constantly shooting, and, you know, especially, you know, I thought that DeMarcus Cousins, I thought that was a great pick. I thought that, you know, there's a lot of people that made the argument that the Nets should have taken him.
I thought that.
Instead of Derek Favors. And, you know, but it's that attitude problem, and I think things could go south pretty quickly if, you know, they're not economical about the way that they're distributing shots. And, like you said, Harrison Barnes doesn't make this problem any easier, but he is, without question, probably the best player left on the board right now.
Let me throw something at you. You can call me crazy if you want. You probably will.
Sure.
But what do you think of a comparison for Harrison Barnes being Adam Morrison? High-volume scorer who's not a great athlete, 6'8". Small forward. You know, Adam Morrison struggled because he's not a great athlete.
He was at Nets camp a couple weeks ago.
Adam Morrison has two rings. If Harrison Barnes gets two rings, I don't know. I feel like it's not that crazy of a comparison. They had offenses structured around them, and they could take a lot of shots, and it made up for, you know, some of their weaknesses. And then when Adam Morrison got to the NBA, he had some issues. Maybe Harrison Barnes will have the same way, because he's not a great athlete who can generate his own shot.
I think,
at this point, at least.
Okay, and I think, I'll say that your argument is valid in that, I mean, Harrison Barnes played in the second most talented offense in college basketball last year, in my opinion.
Right.
So, I mean, he didn't really have, I mean, there.
Kendall Marshall made things very easy for him.
Kendall Marshall made things very easy, but also, I mean, you know, you couldn't just double or triple team Harrison Barnes, you know what I mean? And I think that once he sees that at the next level, I think there could be some problems there because he hasn't been challenged in that way before. And teams are definitely going to throw anything they have at, especially stuff that he hasn't seen. I mean, because he's not going to have John Henson.
And athletes he hasn't seen before guarding.
And he's not going to have Henson and Zeller and, you know, all these other guys. Dexter Strickland, another Jersey product.
You're really milking all our Jersey ties.
but to kind of divert the attention. So I think, I'm not going to call you crazy for the Adam Morrison comparison. I think it's a little out there. But, you know, I think there's some validity to that. I think there'd definitely be some problems. But anyway, moving on. We got Portland taking Damian Lillard. With this guy, I mean, I didn't know a whole lot about him going in. You know, it's something that I had to read up about. But, I mean, the Trailblazers could legitimately use someone to distribute the ball. But also, I mean, Lillard can score, too.
Yeah, Lillard is not a pure point guard in that sense. He can get you buckets, and Portland really is thin in the backcourt right now because, you know, obviously Brandon Roy retired before last year, and though he's talked about coming back, that's really not something you want to rely on. Jamal Crawford's going to be a free agent.
We're looking at their salaries right now. My goodness gracious, that is a lot of money coming off the books for Brandon Roy.
It's a lot of money coming off the books. And then you have Raymond Felton, $7.5 million coming off the books. Jamal Crawford's $5 million. So they're really, really thin in the backcourt. And that's where Lillard can come in right away, start a point guard, and you can build around him.
You're ignoring
Marcus Aldridge, obviously.
You're ignoring Syracuse product Johnny Flynn.
I ignoring him?
Who was paid through 2011-2012. He made like $3.5 million last year. Man, talk about another point guard that didn't pan out. I mean,
I thought he was going to be all right.
I thought he was going to be all right until the Timberwolves decided to go ahead and draft, you know, two in the first... Three. Three, they drafted three point guards that year.
Yeah, I think something like that. And then they also threw him into the triangle offense, which is not quite a strong suit.
Right. But anyway, back to what we have going on here. I mean, you're right. The Portland Trailblazers, they need somebody to move the ball around. And I think that, you know, where we have him going right there, I think that's the right spot. But like you said, there are some questions, too, about when you look at these small school guys. I mean, the numbers can be inflated. Obviously, and I mean, there are definitely some questions, especially if you're Portland at number six, and whether or not you think that there's a chance that Lillard can project that way in the NBA. And I mean, there's a chance that he won't.
Yeah, and there's also some you know, kind of game theory going on by the Trailblazers there, because they have number 11 pick as well. This sixth pick is from the Nets.
Right.
They traded Gerald Wallace for him. And then Gerald Wallace played 16 games before opting out, so they still have to re-sign him. But they have number 11 pick as well, and so it gives them some versatility because you optimally want to get two good guys, two starters, you know, kind of a big and a small if you need to. And, you know, there's some other options at six. We talked about Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
Although he's really freakishly athletic, but he also has some question marks. You know, if he didn't have those question marks, he'd be a top three or five pick. But, you know, his effort's been eh. Connecticut through one season,
mm-hmm.
His free throw shooting, while you don't make a lot of it, is 29%, and that just, I feel like, says a lot
of
things.
Yeah, I mean, you're not Shaq, where that's a luxury that you can afford.
And you like Jeremy Lamb here at number six as well.
Yeah.
So that's another option there. But I think ultimately we went with Lillard because it's a weak point guard class.
Yeah.
So you want to get the first one, and you can get him at six. You won't be able to get another point guard at 11, who's as good.
Yeah. So let's pause here for a minute because, you know, like you said, this is a pick from the Nets, and this is part of our, since we do cover that team, I think it's important to address that really quickly. And so you hated that. You hated the move.
Oh, I thought it was a really, really
poor hated the move. And the way that Billy King justified it was he said that there just wasn't anybody that they liked as an immediate impact player in that range. And, you know, I find it hard to disagree with him at this point. I mean,
I do too, but even if you take that, think about it strategically, right? I mean, Gerald Wallace was probably going to opt out either way, so you still could have you still could have signed him this summer, and on your roster had whatever talent you were going to pick up at the number six pick, and even if they can't contribute in the first 2 years, you still need talent going forward, and if you can get a guy like Andre Drummond at number six, build him up for 2 years, and if all the best case scenarios work out for you with Darren Williams and Dwight Howard, now you have a third star organically with Andre Drummond.
Forgetting about Johan Petro.
And Johan Petro. So I really think it's kind of a short-sighted move that you're only thinking for next year. And that's, you know, kind of, I assume them thinking about Brooklyn and moving in there with a bang.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, the whole Gerald Wallace aspect of it. You could have signed him as a free agent and kept your pick.
Was there any validity, though, to, did you buy, at that point when that move was made, I think that the Nets were 3.5 games or 3 games out of the last playoff spot. When the move was made,
they were not close. Obviously, they weren't close. As far as they ended up.
So, was there any validity to the? I mean, did you appreciate that move at least as something of a? Let's try to make the playoffs here.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to see that, but they had so many teams to jump.
Yeah,
and they weren't healthy the whole time. I think Brook Lopez was in his second injury stint at that point.
Yeah,
and you know. It just seemed like you're selling off too much for what would be a small gain to be, what, the number 8 seed?
Yeah.
Is really the emotional boost of being a number 8 seed worth that much to give away an asset like the number 6 pick?
Probably not.
Not to mention that they could have traded a number 6 pick at this point right now for someone who could contribute next year.
True.
On the trade market.
So anyway, you know, I thought that was important just to stop and
that was good by you.
Break that down for a second. But anyway.
That's good hosting. You've grown as a host as we've Kendall, done these podcasts.
I'm Kendall Marshall of this podcast. Speaking of which, he's not the next pick on the board, but we have Golden State at number 7. And, you know, I really liked Jeremy Lamb at number 6 like we talked about, but I think you talk about a guy that could come in and just really kind of ignite this offense even further than it has. And I love what Lamb can do. I love what he did at Connecticut. And I think he's the perfect pick here for Golden State.
Yeah, I think we agreed here. Because I like him. I liked what he did at UConn, too. He sometimes can be kind of a ball stopper. But with Steph Curry there and Klay Thompson and David Lee and the way that offense is going to work, I think he'll fit in really well.
With Bogut as well.
With Andrew Bogut if he ever stays healthy.
Yeah. No, but I think that, you know, in just watching him, and I mean, we got to see him you know, the Big East tournament, obviously, and just the way that he works in that offense. And I think that in his size also, I mean, he's a bigger two. And I think, you know, all that just projects well. I mean, I don't see as many question marks as, with Lamb as I did, I guess, for some other shooting guards in the draft. And I think that, you know, especially like you said, you pair him with a guy like Steph Curry, and then, you know, that front court isn't bad either, you know.
No, with David Lee and with Andrew Bogut and even Richard Jefferson, whichever way they're going to use him.
Yeah.
Andres Biedrins, they can't quite get rid of him, so he'll be there next year.
He'll be around.
It really made the pick for them
easier. Wow, $9 million a year for the next 2 years.
It made the pick easier for them because the front court is so much more crowded than the back court.
Yeah.
You can't take an Andre Drummond there and throw him into that front court and hope he plays at 15 minutes a game or something like that.
Yeah. And Lamb, I mean, that's not too far off. I mean, there was a couple mock drafts that, you know, seem going 8, 9, 10, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Beauty's all in the eye of the beholder.
It's very true. Except for, I mean, man, if it's anything like my NFL mock draft, then everyone should just turn this off right now because...
Don't scare them away in the middle of the podcast.
No, but I think we're doing okay. So then, this was a pick that you weren't crazy about, if I'm not mistaken. At number 8, the Toronto Raptors. I like Austin Rivers here. Just because I think that they're a little heavy with some of their bigs. And I think that they could use a guy that could take a little bit of the pressure off those guys. A guy that can nail a couple three-pointers, you know, somebody that can move around in the offense. And I think that, you know, Rivers is a stretch, but he's got the pedigree. I hate that word, but it's true. I mean, he's got the pedigree, and he's got that basketball mind. And I think that, you know, for Toronto, I mean, that's a lot of what they're looking for.
Yeah, I think there have been multiple reports that they're shopping it. They want to get kind of a higher impact player right away. But if they do keep it,
good luck in this draft. I mean, to be honest, it's
It is a deep draft. And getting at Austin Rivers at number 8 isn't. I would say that's a good pick.
Yeah,
you kind of have a drop off after the first 5 or 6 picks, to the selections you have after that. But Austin Rivers will give them some scoring right away in the backcourt, and they really don't have that much. They have DeMar DeRozan, who took a semi-leap this year, but they're still hoping to see him grow. And they have Andrea Bargnani, who's kind of a primer-oriented big man.
Yeah.
They do have their 2011 first-round pick probably coming over this year, and there's no way I'm going to try to pronounce that.
Do you want to spell it, or...
It's on you if you want to try it.
No, I'm good. No, but you're right. I mean, I think that that's the kind of pick where they could do something for this offense. And, you know, having a shooting guard to sort of take the pressure off of guys like Bargnani and not force him to kind of control the entire offense, I think would be smart. I think it'd be a smart pick. But like I said, there's a lot of good players still left on the board here, and we'll move on to one of those guys at number 9. I think this is the perfect pick for Detroit. I don't know if he's going to go still have this feeling that he's not going to go in the top 10 for some reason, especially since we actually have Drummond going after him. But right now we like the Pistons with Tyler Zeller from North Carolina at number 9.
I really like Tyler Zeller. I think we agreed on this.
Yeah.
He's really the perfect guy to pair up with Greg Monroe. He can stay at home a little bit more. I think he's underrated as a defender and offensively in the post. And at 7 feet tall, he runs really well for a 7-footer. Mm-hmm. And I really think he's ready to just come in there and contribute right away. And they can work on the rest of their issues in Detroit. It won't be the front court, but they'll have some other ones.
Yeah. I did like, with Detroit, too, you know, some of the other names that I kicked around for this pick, I know that we talked about. I mean, I was trying to find a way to get John Henson anywhere in the top 10. I mean, I thought he was one of my favorite players.
He's 6'10", 216.
He was one of my favorite players in college basketball last year. I loved what he did for North Carolina. But you're right. I think that, practically speaking, Tyler Zeller, probably the best fit for the Pistons right now. Guy that can come in right away. I think he is an NBA-ready center. I mean, there are a lot of guys that come out that aren't, you know, obviously like a Hasheem Thabeet or
I'm talking about bust. You want to throw that on him. You want to compare him to that. It's like,
but guys that, you know, really stuck out in college as centers, because that's the most fickle position to transfer over to the NBA. You never really know how that's going to work.
Yeah, it's kind of like wide receivers coming out of the NFL draft. They're just so much more physically dominant than the guys usually guarding them. They just look so much better. It's like when Yijian Lian worked out against that chair. Yeah, he was going to dominate the chair. Well, yeah, Tyler Zeller is going to dominate most of the guys he plays against in college. But he's a skilled big man, and he can play really well. And I think that was the thing where we chose him over Andre Drummond. It's just kind of the certainty there.
Yeah, but in the same token, we were both kind of, I don't know, we both kind of took on the persona of the Hornets front office when we had Andre Drummond at number 10, and we freaked out a little bit, because that would be a awesome draft. If they could pull off Anthony Davis and Andre Drummond in the same, you know, first 10 picks, that would be an absolutely awesome draft.
We kind of got into the mindset of their ownership, and we were like both David Stern there for a little bit.
So we were rigging the 85 lottery. And, then
and the 2012. Well, never mind. No.
And this lottery, too, yeah.
So we both kind of thought, you know, if you can get Anthony Davis at 1 and Andre Drummond at 10, it's a risk worth taking at number 10
no
when
doubt.
You have Davis at number 1. And if you compare those two and they both work out, I don't remember. That's a Twin Towers type of combination in terms of what they would become.
Yeah. I was a big Rockets guy.
Were you?
Yeah, I
still have a t-shirt. Mid-90s?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was the
early 90s, I'm sorry.
What was the Twin Towers there?
Houston?
Yeah.
Olajuwon, man.
And who's the other tower? Twin Towers means two.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you had Olajuwon.
I thought you were going to say like the mid-80s where it was Ralph Sampson and Olajuwon.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry. The mid-80s.
You were like -2 at that point.
And I had a t-shirt. Does that matter?
No, I guess not. Probably in the long range.
I forgot about that. That was the name. It was Sampson.
Yeah, I was just wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah.
It was you and Mario Ellie?
Anyway. All right, so, so we have Andre Drummond going 10 to the Hornets, 11, the Trailblazers again with another pick. And
this is your boy.
This is my boy, John Henson. I think he's going to work out here. you know, like we said, they're kind of in a weird spot where they have these the sixth pick and the 11th pick. I don't see them making both of these picks on draft day.
You would assume, and the other thing with this is, and I think they took kind of two medium upside guys.
Yeah.
Like Damian Lillard and John Henson, they're both good, and they could turn out to be good NBA starters, but they don't have that. If you take two picks in the first round, you want to take a risk at some point.
Yeah.
A reasonable risk.
Well, I mean, Henson at the same time, right? Couldn't you say that if he puts on a little bit of weight, gets a little bit stronger,
he could be like a Serge Ibaka type, but I don't know if he's offensively skilled enough to become, you know, a really good two-way player, to use hockey terms, because I was covering Stanley Cup and still going to use the hockey terms.
Okay. We're going a little bit rapid fire here because, honestly, I mean, I don't think a lot of these picks are going to – a lot of these teams are going to make these picks anyway. But, all right, number 12, Milwaukee Bucks, Myers Leonard, Illinois. You know, with Bogut no longer there, I think it's good to invest, you know, in somebody who can clean up the glass.
Yeah, and Myers Leonard, for a seven-footer, also really athletic. I'm watching him play at Illinois last year. It kind of jumps out at you because you don't expect it. You kind of expect him to be a sturdy, stay-at-home Midwestern center. But he can really jump and run, and it's surprising. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him go higher in the draft just based on that.
But the center class in general, I mean, we've kind of talked about it, and we kind of have them bunched down here. But I think that's going to be one of the most interesting things is to see how other GMs rate them. I mean, we have
three going in four picks from 9 to 12.
And we have, you know, we have Zeller, Drummond, and then Leonard. But, I mean, that's the kind of position, too, where it's all kind of in the eye of the beholder. Leonard could go 9 to the Pistons, theoretically. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see John Henson drop a little bit or Andre Drummond go at like number 6.
Exactly. All right, so now number 13,
you can tell the Phoenix Suns.
It makes me feel old because I went to Syracuse and I covered Deion Waiters recruiting. So, you know, I used to back when he was in high school. And then saw him for a year at Syracuse. I think he fits in well with the Suns offense and he's a great scorer. I mean, he's the kind of guy that will shoot. He'll chuck it. And I don't know necessarily. I mean, and he's fast, too. And I mean, he can run with the offense. He can play in that offense. Whether or not his skill set fully translates, I'm not exactly sure. But for somebody who's looking for a player to put up some points, a guy that could be a dynamic shooting guard in the NBA, I think Waiters, you know, is a risk worth taking at 14.
Yeah, and especially with Steve Nash maybe leaving Phoenix, he could be a sleeper guy for the Rookie of the Year next year, just on volume of shots he'll be able to take.
Oh, yeah.
And he probably will take.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't seem to have a conscience in shot selection.
Not at all. And that was something, too, that, you know, Boeheim could not calm that down, and that's just something that he has, and that's just something that teams are going to live with. But I think that he's a great option for them just because, like you said, Nash might be gone. You don't really know what's going to happen with that team. And worst-case scenario, you need a guy that's going to put up some points with two or three guys on him. And Waiters, at least, has shown that he can do that at Syracuse. So, and then we're rounding things out. Number 14, the Houston Rockets. This is a guy that I keep advocating to push back up the draft board.
And I have to, like, temper you down.
You have to temper me, push me back down. Jared Sullinger from Ohio State, who, I mean, talk about a guy who cost himself some money by not coming out. And you hate to say that because, you know, I'm all for guys staying in college for 3 or 4 years. You know, and, you know, he decided to stay at Ohio State for 2. But I don't think this is a bad pick for Houston. I think this is a really smart pick for Houston. And I hate when guys who are projected in the top 5 all of a sudden get flagged before the draft and get pushed down, pushed down.
Well, he got flagged for injury.
Yeah.
I mean, he seemed to have some back issues. And I didn't think he was a top 5 player to begin with, mainly because he's not a great athlete, you know?
How can you say he's not 6'8", a great athlete?
He's not a great NBA athlete. He's kind of, he's floor-bound. Gravity's always keeping him down.
He's kind of like a Sean May, or is that what you're calling him?
Did you see how Sean May's NBA career winded up?
Right, I mean, but is that how you see him, is what I'm asking?
No, he's in much better shape than Sean May was. Sean May always had, you know, a battle with the buffet line that he seemed to lose.
Sure.
But Jared Sullinger, he got himself in shape, but he's still not a great athlete. He doesn't jump really well. He doesn't have great length. He has some back issues, apparently, that were red flagged by teams, as several outlets reported. That's why his stock kind of went down. But he's perfect for Houston because they love NBA-ready guys. They're very big on sabermetrics and understanding how college production translates into NBA production. Mm-hmm. And Jared Sollinger was very productive in college, I think a two-time All-American. And at 14, last pick the draft, and they also have the 16th pick, this is where you want to take that chance.
Yeah.
Because the upside outweighs a middle-of-the-first-round pick that, you know, worst comes to worst, you just blow.
And I could even see, you know, we have the full mock that will appear in the paper. We have the Rockets taking Terrence Jones from Kentucky at 16. I could even see those picks flipping, too.
Yeah, and we have Perry Jones at 15, so that's another they could take any two of those three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, let me just say one thing before we close out.
Is this another defense of Jared Sollinger?
Yeah, because we talked about, like, red flags. I mean, did you ever read the, I think it was, like, the, one of the newspapers in Seattle had the Supersonics draft book on Kevin Durant, and then it was just recently republished. And, you know, a lot of teams red flagged him because he couldn't bench press 185 pounds. I mean, I'm not making the comparison. I'm just saying that red flags sometimes are, you know.
Well, I'm just saying, Connor, much like you, you get him in the weight room, you get him on some protein shakes, he gets jacked, he starts to get stronger. Back injuries, they're a little bit more dangerous. But I think before we go, we do want to talk about one more thing. We talked about the Nets.
Oh, right.
And a little bit, and we need to talk about the Knicks as well. Both teams at this point, now that we're done with the lottery, and I think half of America stops caring after the lottery. So you'll see the other 16 picks in our mock draft that runs in the paper. The Nets and the Knicks, the Knicks have the number 48 overall pick. Nets have the number 57. We were talking about earlier about how there's a good chance that they might buy into the latter half of the first round, somewhere starting at like 25 and down.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to be looking for at that point? And, you know, who could they be interested in?
The Nets, I mean, that's the most interesting question because their team is so in flux right now. And it's just, you know, what are they going to look like next year? Who are they going to have to actually roll over and, you know, start anew with? I mean, is Brook Lopez going to be their franchise player heading into Brooklyn? I mean, there's a lot of questions there. But I think that, you know, one of the things that they could definitely use you know, and I liked the Marshawn Brooks pick last year. I thought that was a good pick, and I think that he works well with Darren. And I think what they need to do, though, is actually, if Jared Wallace doesn't come back, is actually look at a legitimate three. And maybe a legitimate four, too, because you don't know what's going to happen with Chris Humphries either. But I think in that range right there is something that you're looking at for the Nets, because those are two issues that are going to have to be solved immediately. And, you know, you look at, you know, okay, if Dwight Howard's going to be here, if Brook Lopez is going to be here. But, you know, and that's tough. I mean, it's tough for them because, you know, they're mortgaging a lot for their future. And that also includes giving up a lot of draft picks. And, you know, when you look kind of way down the line, it's tough to see somebody, an immediate impact three or four, that could appear to them.
Oh, you're maybe probably not getting at the bottom of the first round.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to make that assumption, but I really do think that that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a three, looking for a four, someone who can help out on the boards, someone who can, you know, hit a jump shot or two.
Yeah, and I mean, the best case scenarios for getting those picks would be, you know, at 28 with Oklahoma City, because they have enough young guys. They may not want to add another young rookie to the group there, or Golden State at 30 with their second first round pick. And maybe they want to invest, kind of wait for 2 years for someone to get ready. I know they don't want to do that at number six, or they didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe take like an Evan Fournier, who's a 19-year-old from France, who might dip in the draft because he might not be ready to come over next year. Think long term. He's a swing guy. I know you like Marquise Teague, the point guard out of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be someone where you kind of have to be ready for Darren if he does leave.
Yeah.
You want something there. You don't want to go into the regular season with Sundiata Gaines as your starting point guard.
Well, you don't. I would. No, but I think, too, I mean, I still think that Williams will be there next year. I mean,
that's
I think
what they're
that,
banking on.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you talk about it from just a purely, like, a monetary point of view, I mean, I don't think anybody else is going to shell out that kind of money and those kind of years for him. And I think he knows that, too. And whether or not, you know, he lets that affect his decision. I mean, if he wants money more than a title, if, you know, depends on what the Magic do with Dwight Howard, too. But
yeah.
I think that, I do think he's going to be there. So that's why I think the three or the four would be a point of emphasis. But then you look at the Knicks, that's a more interesting team in my mind because, you know, they have pieces, but it's just...
They don't mesh well.
They don't mesh well at all.
And there's nothing they can do about it at this point.
Right. I mean, they're kind of stuck with what they have. There's these kind of immovable objects. So, I mean, I guess you look at anybody that could come in and be just sort of a nice complimentary player.
And they have some holes opening up in the complimentary, you know, in those guys. They have, I think, Steve Novak is a free agent. J.R. Smith, I think, is going to be a free agent. Iman Shumpert's coming off an ACL tear. Mm-hmm. He looked like he was going to be there to... their starting shooting guard, but who knows how you recover from an ACL tear. Jeremy Lin is a free agent, so you have to figure that out. There's been rumblings of them going after Steve Nash. And obviously, Amari Stoudemire, he's still injury-prone, so you want someone who can be a power forward and a backup to him, and they missed, not missed, they made a decision to go with Iman Shumpert last year over Kenneth Faried.
Yeah.
That could have been something big for them. So now you have the 18th pick in the second round, number 48, and really, you're just hoping to hit big on somebody. So maybe a Scott Machado, the point guard out of Iona. He went to St. Benedict's. He could be a good backup point guard for them, led the NCAA in assists per game. Maybe they get Jared Cunningham, a good combo guard out of Oregon State. That's kind of what you're going for there. You want to see someone who can contribute right away, but you know it probably doesn't have that much upside.
Someone who could pass.
Someone who could pass.
Yeah, someone who has no interest at all in shooting.
In the iso mellow offense.
Yeah, the Mike Woodson get mellow.
Someone who can play defense.
Sure,
they are a defensive team now.
Yeah.
They were, I think, fifth in the NBA in points per 100 possessions last year. So they do have a defensive identity they want to keep up.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that those are two things that they're definitely going to look heavily for is assist, defense. Just something, like you said, it's going
to
be
a lot of game you have. Because we played basketball before. You're a very good defender. You're always looking to move the ball, get guys open.
I think scoring's
not your thing.
Machado can dribble with both of his hands. I still have a
well, but
bit
if
of
you don't if you don't
that.
Tell people which hand you dribble with, they'll be surprised.
It's a good point. It's a good point. All right. Well, you know, thanks for coming back. We'll be hoping to do these you know more as we go throughout the season and. We'll obviously have you know full slate of coverage in the Star Ledger and on NJ.com for draft day. But yeah, I mean, I think that's where we're going to leave things for today. Like we said, the rest of our first round mock draft will appear on NJ.com and in the paper. You can check it out there. And if you like it, don't like it, our email addresses are at the bottom. So tell us you hate it and keep coming back for Star Ledger podcast. For Mike Vorkunov, I'm Connor Orr, and we will see you guys later.